Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. I'm one of your hosts, Phil Huff, and I'm with my co-host, Julie. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Phil. I didn't have my volume up. I wasn't sure anything was going on, but I see it is. Yeah.
We are live, as they say, in the studios at KRFY Central, 323 North 1st Avenue.
We're mostly live, anyway.
Some of us are more alive than others this morning, I think.
But, I think so.
It's a beautiful May day. We're going to get into the weather in a moment, but tell us a little bit about your weekend. Did you do anything fun?
Well, Phil, I didn't do that much. I did a little morel hunting, but the exciting thing that I did was I got invited on a rafting trip on the Smith River in Montana, a very highly sought after permit. So I'm very excited about that.
And that's just the invitation you're excited about.
I know. That'll be next week. So you all won't be hearing from me next week. What?
You're not here next Tuesday?
Nope.
Oh,
not.
Man. I think I can hold it down. You owe me. I owe you a couple, I'm sure. Well, I got most of the garden in, the
good
early stuff, lettuce and peas, and looking at that frost warning, and I don't see it in the immediate future for our area, so I think we're safe on the lettuce and peas anyway for the time being. But the snow's off, not off the top of Baldy, so it's really too early for tomatoes.
Too early for tomatoes, for sure.
Well, let's take a look at the weather for the coming week since we brought that up. Today we have a slight chance of showers. It doesn't look like it right now, but I think that's growing later on this afternoon and this evening. We should hit a high of 71 degrees. Tonight, a low of, it doesn't say, of 44. So we're getting down back cool temperatures, but nowhere near freezing. Tomorrow, sunny and 70, low 42. Wait for it. Thursday, sunny. Friday, mostly sunny, and Saturday, sunny. When was the last time we saw 5 sunny days on the screen here?
It's been a while, Phil, but doesn't that sound like summer weather? Sunny days and not freezing? This is gardening weather.
Yeah, it's May. Time to get out and do some things. The light is lingering on into the evenings. Get out and take an evening stroll or plant your garden.
I bet it's bear weather. They must all be up.
The bears are up and they're out. And, you know, we're going to speak about that a little bit this morning. And I don't know if our guest came prepared to talk about the one that was just recently found down in the Coeur d'Alenes. Pretty exciting in some ways.
Well, let's introduce him. We're joined this morning by one of our favorite folks that will come and talk with us, and it's Brian Johnson. He's a conservation officer with Idaho Fish and Game Panhandle Region. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Julie. Good morning, Phil.
So good to have you.
Glad to be here.
Welcome back, Brian.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about the position you occupy at Idaho Fish and Game.
Well, Phil, I'm a conservation officer, so my duties, I'm responsible for enforcing the hunting and fishing laws for the state of Idaho, but I've been assigned to the Grizzly Bear Recovery Project for the last 25 years, so that is the focus of my job.
That's a pretty big job. Yeah. Grizzly bears, they're controversial, they're a little scary. There are not that many of them.
There are. That is true, Julie. I've got a lot of help, though. There's a lot of folks with Fishing Game and with the Forest Service, and there's a lot of people working on the bears.
Sounds like a really exciting job. So tell us about your background. How did you prepare for that?
I have a bachelor's degree in wildlife biology from Colorado State University, and I came to Idaho back in the 1980s working on the Woodland Caribou Project, and I just kind of fell in with grizzly bears over the years.
Mm-hmm. Well, luckily for you, there are fewer caribou, but there seem to be a few more grizzly bears.
The grizzly bears are doing much better. The caribou, I guess it looks a little grim for the caribou, but the grizzly bears, without a doubt, are doing much better than they were when I started 30 years ago. So,
do we have any idea on the numbers? I know that they don't sit there and at their abodes and be counted like the people will with the census takers, but there is an ability to count them somewhat.
Correct, Phil, yes. People have been trying to figure out how to count grizzly bears since the early 1960s when the Craighead brothers started down in Yellowstone. And the methods that are out there are very expensive and they're very labor-intensive. But at any given time, and you're right, they come and go across the borders with Montana and Washington and Canada. At any given time, roughly 40 grizzly bears north of Lake Ponderay in Idaho. But keep in mind, for every grizzly out there, there's couple hundred black bears for every grizzly out there, but they are coming back.
Yeah, and we don't see them as often as you might think, given their numbers.
Pardon me?
We don't see even the black bears as often as you might think, given their numbers.
Oh, exactly. Most of the time when people see them, they're in their backyard getting into their fruit trees or something like that. You're right. They tend to stay to themselves most of the time. So
let's talk about that a little bit more. They're big animals, black bears and grizzly bears. Why don't we see them more often?
Well, they're pretty secretive, and for the most part, they don't want anything to do with people. Generally speaking, the only time they're around folks is when we either we surprise them or when they're looking for food. You know, you gotta look at it, Julie, from the bear standpoint. They sleep 5 months out of the year. So during the summertime, they're eating machines. They've got to get 12 months worth of calories in those 7 months they're awake. So they're looking for food. So the key to avoiding conflicts is that they don't get anything to eat when they come to your home. So
yeah, and they're for their size, they're really fairly quiet. They move around. Most of the times I've seen them, it's because I've seen them, not because I've heard them.
You're absolutely right, Phil. Yes, it's amazing on those big pads and for as large an animal as they are, how quietly they can move. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. So
how did you become interested in the bears?
Well, they hired me. I needed a job. I was married. I had a baby on the way, and I needed a job, and they hired me, and it all went from there. But I do find them fascinating animals to work with. I consider myself very lucky to have been working with the bears all these years. So.
Well, and Brian, compared to working with caribou, working with bears is a little more maybe interesting and maybe slightly more dangerous. Is that true?
Well, yeah, I guess it can be, Julie. One thing to keep in mind is my job is more of a people job than a bear job. I sometimes go quite a long time without even laying my eyes on the grizzly bear. My job primarily is to try to help people, teach people how to live with the bears and avoid conflict with the bears. So my job is more geared toward people, although I do work with the bears as well.
From time to time.
Yeah, that's an interesting balance. So you get a little time in the field out with the bears or the bear habitat, and you get a lot of time, it sounds like, in the meeting halls.
Sure, exactly. Primarily when I'm actually working with the bears would be in depredation situations when the bears are in people's getting into trouble in people's yards or whatnot. And Phil, most of the time when people call me and say they have a bear problem, most of the time it's really not the bear that's the problem. Yeah. It's a human sanitation issue most of the time. There are exceptions to that, but most of the time it has to do with improperly stored garbage or improperly stored food in some capacity.
So, and are you able to help them clean up their act, as it were?
Many times, yes. It depends on how cooperative people are. We can't make someone follow the do's and don'ts for living in bear country. But it is important to remember that everybody who lives in North Idaho, I don't care if you live in Coeur d'Alene or in Sandpoint, you live in bear country. And you simply can't do certain things if you want to avoid conflicts with the bears. They're looking for food all the time. So. Mm-hmm.
So the counseling really isn't with the bears, it's with the people. You can't really talk with the bears and say,
well,
you guys
I suppose I could, Julie, but I think it'd be a one-sided conversation, you know. So, yeah, it's the emphasis is with folks, working with people. So. Yeah.
You know, we see Facebook photos of people up at Schweitzer with bears on their decks and here and there. I mean, there are an awful lot of bear photos where they're sort of, well, not sort of, they're very close to human habitation.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, cool. So we do need to work on it. So tell us, what do you find most interesting about your work with people and with bears?
Oh, my goodness. That's one of the things about my job that I love, Julie, is the diversity of the work, and in no 2 days are the same. But I guess I love the challenge of working with both people and the bears. It's been a wonderful career. I've loved doing what I've done for all these years, so...
Pretty fun.
So I think this is probably a good time to maybe do a quick rundown for the audience, because some people have just moved here. They're not used to being in bear country.
Sure.
So give us the rundown on do's and don'ts for, say, living in a urban wild life interface. And then I'll ask you the same thing for the backcountry when you're visiting.
Sure. Well, if you at your home, the most important thing to remember is that you don't have food sources outside. Again, even if you live in Sandpoint or in the countryside around, if you have food out, you will have unwanted visitors, whether it's bears or raccoons or skunks or squirrels or some sort of animal will find it if you have food out. So basically, you want to have your garbage stored in either bear-proof containers, which I admit they're expensive, but the most common technique most people would use is to lock your garbage up in a shed or a garage or some sort of hard-sided facility to keep it unavailable to the animals. And then other things such as dog food, cat food, that's a common attractant for the bears. We recommend only feeding the animals. If you feed them outside, only feed them enough that they eat it at one time. Don't put out 10 days worth of dog food or cat food mm-hmm. at one time. Just put out enough at one time.
Mm-hmm. And what about our gardens and compost piles? What can we do to make
those
sure
are challenging? Gardens, it depends on what you have in the garden. Fruit trees are the biggest draw, and they are the most challenging thing to deal with, Phil. By far, fruit trees are. And the issue usually is that the people have their fruit trees scattered. If you have your fruit trees concentrated in an orchard, it's much easier to protect them. And again, if you, with a garden, whether it's bears or whatever, deer, whatever, fencing is the most important thing of some kind. Electric fencing is highly effective for bears. Mm-hmm. Standard 8-foot woven wire is what we recommend for like deer. But with bears, well, it's going to have to take electric fencing most of the time if you're getting them into your fruit trees. So.
And the big one I think a lot of people will have to swallow on bird feeders.
Yes.
Bird feeders is tough. And I will say that some little old ladies who love their bird feeders have been some of the most challenging people I've had to work with because they don't want to give up those bird feeders. But I will. We do recommend that you don't feed from April 1st through the end of November. The birds don't need it. There's abundant wild food at that time. And then we recommend you put the bird feeders away and just put them out during the wintertime. Especially attractive to the bears are the black sunflower seeds. They absolutely love those black sunflower seeds. They're high in fat. The bears love those things. So we recommend, again, we can't make you comply, but we recommend you don't feed during the summer months. So,
well, Brian, that is some news for me, and I am still feeding. What about an electric fence around your bird feeders?
I have known people have done that. We had over by Priest Lake a gentleman who grizzly bear was getting repeatedly into his bird feeder, and he electrified the bird feeder. The bear got one highly shocking experience, and that solved the problem. I'm not quite sure how he rigged it so that the birds weren't shocked, but he had something figured out there. So the bears don't like electricity if you use it correctly.
So the things that they're attracted to them, the food, various different kinds of things that'll give an odor, a smell, and the electric fence is a deterrent once they zap their nose on it once or twice probably. What about dogs in the yard? Does that attract them or repel them?
Well, it depends on the size of the dog, Phil, and different factors. Usually, it's the feed they're after. Yeah. They'll get in a scrap with the dog over the dog food, not the dog itself. A few years ago, a little interesting story for me was I had a call up the Pack River where a gentleman had two young grizzlies were coming into and getting into his garbage, and he called me. Quite often when mama kicks the young bears out, they'll stay together for some period of time. So they were siblings, and they're probably 180, 200 pounds each. And he had video footage of these two bears walking down the driveway. And he had a little dog, couldn't have weighed more than 10 pounds, but this dog had the heart of a lion. And he charges right at those two bears. And those bears, there's a look of total panic in their eyes. And they turn and they are running from this dog like it is Cujo himself. And they're looking over their shoulders back at this little 10-pound dog and running for their lives from this bear. So it depends on the bears and it depends on the dogs.
Yeah, we know dogs like that. I think Julie has one of those little terriers. Yeah.
That little guy's name is Dex, and I know he'd make a valiant effort to chase off bears, but I'm not sure he'd survive it.
And we know there's great big German Shepherd lap dogs who might look more intimidating but not act that way once confronted. But generally speaking, it's not sufficient to simply have a dog in the yard to dissuade a bear from coming around.
I would say no. And it depends, again, tremendously on the personality of the bear. Had that been an old, experienced bear, the outcome of that might have been very different from what we saw. Bears are just like human beings in that they have very different personalities, just like we do. Some are very timid. Some are much more aggressive. And that little dog got lucky with two inexperienced juvenile bears.
I would think so. Brian, are most bear-human interactions in like a human setting, or do they tend to be more in a wilderness setting?
Well, Julie, I guess it's a mix of both. I say more interactions occur just by volume, more interactions occur near people's homes. We have so many people living in rural areas in Idaho, and more people doing so. Everybody wants their little 10 acres of paradise or whatnot. One of the things we're seeing a lot now is a lot of people are getting into those small farmsteads, like with chickens, getting into chickens, whatnot. Mm-hmm. Chickens are a tremendous draw for the bears. It's not the chickens themselves. Again, it's the feed. They're after the feed. I see more of that at the home sites, I guess, but it certainly does happen in the backcountry. Not as much here as in places like Yellowstone and Northern Continental Divide, where the bears are more habituated mm-hmm. people. These are still wild bears, and we want to keep them that way. So,
yeah, I suspect those who are keeping bees, it's not the bees they're after, but that honey might attract them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And most of the beekeepers are very skookum to how to deal with that. Either they put them on platforms mm-hmm. or they electrify their apiaries, yeah.
So we've talked about the need for making sure your home or farm or ranch is safe. Tell us about the backcountry. Let's carry some of these concepts to the people who are hiking, horseback riding, doing other activities, fishing in the backcountry.
Sure, sure. The most important thing to remember, again, is being aware and being alert to your surroundings. I highly recommend carrying bear spray and learning how to use it. Bear spray has been proven to be an extremely effective tool in defending against close encounters with bears. However, that doesn't excuse just poor behavior in the woods. You still need to be careful about what you're doing. Making noise is critical. Again, you have to remember, most of the time the bears don't want anything to do with us. They're trying to avoid us. And if they hear you coming, most of the time they're long gone before you're ever anywhere near them. So making noise while you're out there, hiking in groups is recommended. Horseback, you're extremely safe on horseback. There are very, very few cases of anyone being involved in bear conflicts with horses. But again, storing food and storing your horse grain and whatnot so the bears can't get it is critical when you're in bear country.
And Brian, I did a guided backpacking trip in Canada a number of years ago, and something that the guide told us was that people in larger groups are less likely to be in danger than single people or pairs of people.
Absolutely, Julie. There's no doubt about it. Statistically, that can be shown. And I think there's a variety of things going on. The biggest factor, of course, is a group of people are going to be making more noise. So right. Again, the bear's going to hear you coming. But also, if you think about it from a psychological standpoint, if you go looking for a fight, do you want to take on one or two people or 10 people? You know, it's just psychologically, I'm sure it's intimidating when there's a large group of people.
So proper food storage in the backcountry warrants a little more conversation. A lot of, again, people are new to the area and they might come from a part of the country where that isn't a requirement. And actually here, it's not only a good idea, but it is required by the land management agencies that food be stored properly, the bear safe container at a campsite that's designed for that, or with a bear canister or properly hung on a tree, which isn't just the easiest thing to do. Going out and practicing that is a good idea.
You're absolutely right, Phil. If you're car camping, the simple solution, yeah. of course, is lock it up in your vehicle, mm-hmm. inside the cab of the truck or inside the car. I've had calls from people in the middle of the night. They leave their food out on the picnic table or whatever, and then they have a bear tearing up the camp in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. So if you're car camping, lock it up inside the cab. Mm-hmm. of the car or the trunk mm-hmm. of the car.
With windows rolled up, I suppose.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And people will always say, well, I've heard about incidents in Yosemite, for example, where the bears actually break into the cars. Those things are extremely rare in North Idaho. They have happened at Schweitzer in particular. I'm familiar with some incidents at Schweitzer. But for the most part, our bears are wild. They haven't got that figured out, that trick figured mm-hmm. out. So
now, you're carrying the bear spray. All else fails and you have an encounter where you have to deploy it, good to go out and practice it beforehand. Julie and I were at a training this weekend, and one of the major takeaways was most people can't get that safety clip off under pressure.
Yeah, it is definitely a good idea to practice with the can before you have to use it in an emergency situation. And something else to keep in mind, Phil, is the propellant does expire after a few years. The manufacturer's recommending you replace them every 4 years. Take out your old cans and test them out. Be careful when you're doing that. But I took out a can that was about 20 years old just to test yeah. it out here recently. And it just, what happens is the cayenne pepper, which is the part that deters the bear, it's still potent, but the propellant expires. And this stuff just, the 20-year-old can just dribbled out of the can. I would have had to take it with my fingers and smear it into Bear's eyes.
We did the same thing last summer. We were going into Bear Country. We were going to buy a new canister because ours had expired. I honestly wasn't aware how out of expiration date it was. It was about 8-9 years past. I thought, well, before throwing it away, you want to expel it so it doesn't go into the system with aerosol in it. And I was also curious to see how well it would do. It would have stopped the bear within 3 feet of me. But the pepper was good, but that propellant wasn't going very far at all.
Okay. And it's cheap insurance. Just think about it that way. They're not that expensive. It's best to replace them every few years.
Guys, I think the only solution at that point is to throw yourself on the pepper spray and hope that they find you unpalatable.
Right. Spray yourself and hike in a big group.
That's right. Has that been tried, Brian?
Well, I have heard of people who were not familiar with bear spray thinking that it was sort of like insect repellent and actually sprayed their children with it.
Oh.
You would only do that one time, and you would realize the mistake you had made.
So, I think so.
You touched earlier, and I think most people are aware, you know, bears are a seasonal animal. They hibernate. But let's talk about those seasons, you know, when they're out, when they're coming out. Their behavior, and so our behavior needing to be somewhat different maybe in the spring and fall from even the summer.
Well, Phil, the bear's behavior certainly does change throughout the year, and you have to keep in mind, too, they can be active any time of the year. They do, of course, den up in the wintertime, but I have had to deal with bears even in December and January. Usually it's in a bad bear year where they didn't get sufficient food. And so they'll abandon their dens because they're starving. All right. The other incident would be if the reverse situation, if they have abundant food source, they may stay out because they just have food, and they'll stay out into January sometimes if they have abundant food. So they can be active any time of the year. As far as conflicts go, probably more conflicts occur in the fall, but that may simply be a factor of the fact that there's more people out in the woods, a lot of hunters and whatnot out in the woods during the fall. I don't know if it has to do with the actual bear's behavior or not.
Yes, and that's a time when people are being rather quiet if they're hunting.
Exactly, and that's something to keep in mind for hunters is, we're doing all of the wrong things for actually avoiding bears. We're, instead of making noise, we're sneaking through the woods as quietly as we can. So hunters do sometimes have close encounters, and that's when things can happen. So,
Other things that hunters should be aware of?
Proper storage of game would be an important one. Get your game out of the woods as quickly as you possibly can after you kill it. Keep the gut pile. Try to get the meat away from the gut pile. The gut pile tends to attract the bears more so than the meat itself. And then, of course, in your camp, make the meat inaccessible as you can. Store it in a horse trailer, hard-sided container, or hang it high where the bears cannot reach it. I have had black bears come into camps and tear down deer carcasses that were hanging in camp. I haven't had a grizzly yet, but I have had black bears do that, where they'll come in and just tear down the deer.
And if you come back and the bear's on it, is it yours or the bear's at that point?
I would give it to the bear myself. You know, I wouldn't get into a fight with a bear over a deer myself.
Yeah. So let's talk about fisher folk. You know, we think of the hunting more naturally, but, you know, I know Julie does mostly catch and release, but there are some folks who keep their fish. Should they be cleaning them on the shore, dumping the remains in the river, taking them home?
Well, we recommend if you do leave your fish guts, we recommend not just dumping them on the shoreline. Not only is it unattractive to everybody else coming there, but it can, of course, draw in bears or other unwanted creatures. But especially at the high mountain lakes, you'll see people gutting their fish and leaving the entrails right there. The rate of decomposition in those high mountain lakes is forever. I don't know how long it takes, but we recommend, please, if you do that, throw them out way out into deep water or burn them very thoroughly in your campfire. All right, but that brings up campfires again. Please don't leave garbage and whatnot in your campfires. That can be an attractant for the bears as well. If you burn your garbage, burn it extremely thoroughly, because you may not have any trouble, but if there's food residue left in the campfire and you've gone home, someone else may have a bear in camp. So,
very important.
Yeah, good advice. And burying it probably is not sufficient.
No.
Oh, no, no.
Hard
please
to do.
Please don't bury. Please don't bury. Yeah, yeah. You'd have to have a backhole to dig deep enough to hide it from the bears.
All right.
Yeah. Their noses are just incredible.
Incredible, yes, yes.
Brian, how many, do we have an idea of just how many bears are out there? You talked about grizzly bears, but how many black bears do you think are out there? Just thousands?
Thousands. Oh, dear. Yes, yes. Bears are very hard to count. The most reliable technique that's been developed is with DNA analysis, and it's very labor-intensive and very expensive. But you may see that if you're out in the woods and you pay attention, especially if you're crossing you see Forest Service signposts or whatnot, you might see a little piece of barbed wire attached to that. Those are sites that are specifically designed to catch bear hair and use for DNA analysis to develop population estimates. So,
now the one deterrent we haven't talked about much, and it's in the order of range of things to do somewhere, are bear bells.
Mm-hmm.
People may not want to be talking the whole time, but sometimes they can put those little bells in the back of their backpacks. I always felt like I was more like Dexter than a hiker at that point, but
or a cat.
But,
sure.
But do they work?
Well, the idea again, Phil, is just noise, making mm-hmm. noise. Bear bells. I don't think they make a. They're extremely loud. I don't think they make a lot of sound. But I haven't seen any studies that show one way or the other whether they're effective. But the whole biggest thing is to make noise. One thing that is highly effective are air horns. They have been proven that the bears will vacate the premises if you use air horns, although all of the other hikers in the area may hate you for using them, but they are extremely effective. In Alaska, people that were working on the salmon streams doing research used air horns, mm-hmm. and they never saw bears, even along salmon streams mm-hmm. where the bears want to be.
So. I had a friend from Alaska who swore by firecrackers.
Firecrackers, anything with noise. Yeah. Sure.
So to be clear, you're saying that people might just blast off air horns not when they see a bear, just from time to time, or when they see bears?
I would use it before you see the bear. Things get more complicated if you're actually seeing the bear.
Okay.
Yeah, so
the other major recreation group out at the time of year might see bears we haven't talked about are mountain bikers.
Okay.
Anything particular for the mountain bike audience listening?
Sure. The key thing to keep in mind with mountain bikes is you're moving very fast and very quietly, which means you can sneak up on the bears very quickly. Again, the key thing to remember is most bear attacks are not predatory in nature. Most bear attacks are due to surprise encounters. You surprise them within their personal space and they feel threatened, so they attack aggressively because they feel threatened. Mountain bikers are quite capable of doing that if they're moving silently and swiftly. And, of course, there was a very tragic incident over in Montana mm-hmm. a couple of years ago when a Forest Service employee was actually killed while mountain biking. He essentially ran into that bear and was killed after he ran into the bear.
Oh, my.
So it's the element of surprise. It's not so much the bikes are doing something that attracts the bears.
Exactly.
Or sounds, but they're coming around the corner, they can't hear it, and bang, it's there.
Exactly. The person is traveling so fast and quietly, and they're right there within the personal space of the bear. That's the danger. So.
It's really true. Yeah. When I'm hiking, bikers will come up so suddenly, my dog doesn't know about them. They're just there. They really are moving fastly, quickly, and quietly.
Yeah. Downhill especially, yes. Mm-hmm.
So if you're a mountain biker, then noise in some form, I guess talk more while you're doing it, or are there noise devices for mountain bikes you're aware of?
That I couldn't tell you, Phil. I'm not that good on mountain bikes. I would just be especially concerned if you're in a high bear area and you're moving fast and you're in an area where you can't see very far. That's when I'd really be concerned, and definitely carry bear spray.
I'm thinking of fall at Schweitzer when the berries are out and we know the bears are up there, and there's some great mountain biking up there with some turns that aren't real visible. So I know we have a few people in the audience who are mountain bikers listening, and maybe some of them have an engineering bent or design and can come up with the equivalent of a bear whistle, like cars have deer whistles.
Mm. There you go.
More advanced than cards in your spokes, Phil.
Yes, more advanced than cards in your spokes. Or the little bell on the front handlebars probably just isn't like
probably
the
not
right
the
image.
Ching, ching, yeah. Ching, ching.
On that note, I think we're going to take a short music break. We're at the bottom of the hour. If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5. KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. This morning we're talking with Brian Johnson, bear expert for Idaho Fish and Bear might have said, that's my Chinook. I'm not stealing it.
That's right. Yeah. I like that last part.
Yeah, good for a Tuesday morning. A little bit of Jack Gladstone, the bear who stole the Chinook. Welcome back to the Tuesday morning show. Julie and I are here with Brian Johnson this morning. We're talking about bears. We're going to talk a little more in a bit about the full range of things that Brian does for Idaho Fish and Game. But I do want to follow up on the thread we left off on. A mountain biking friend of mine texted me on the break and said, mountain bikers often have a bell mounted on their handlebars. So it is a cool thing to do and a safe thing to do. He also goes on to say he calls out hay bears or something silly if I'm riding in bear habitat. That's good practice. Hikers often do that, smart ones. Live hikers do that. Most importantly, and here's the pro tip, always carry a bottle of bear spray in the bottle cage. I guess that's where the water bottle might normally be, but if you're in a high-density bear area, good idea. Have your pepper spray handy. If it's in the panniers, you can't get to it in time.
No, somewhere you can reach it. Good idea. Yeah.
Well, welcome back, Brian. We left off talking about do's and don'ts and best practices. Let's segue for a moment. All that fails. Incidents. Have there been incidents in the recent past? What are they like?
Well, Phil, one of the things to keep in mind is bear attacks on human beings are very rare. They do happen, but keep in mind, on average, about 3 people in all of North America are killed every year by bears. Keep that in perspective. You know, many, many more people are killed, struck and killed by lightning. And, of course, the most dangerous thing we all do is drive around in cars. Thousands of Americans die on our highways every year. But there are things we can all do to be safer in bear country because there's no question bears can be very dangerous animals. So incidents do occur. So.
But truly, 3 per year, that's, considering the population of the U.S., that's a tiny, tiny fraction. It's tiny.
Well, and that, Julie, that number includes all of Alaska and all of Canada as well. So yeah. basically all of North America.
Yeah, so we can look even immediately in our region and see a whole lot more instances of that just with deers and cars and the fatalities that that creates for humans.
Right. Mountain lions might even be more dangerous.
Well, they can be. That's a whole nother yeah. topic there.
Not today, baby. Yeah. We'll stick with bears for the moment.
We'll come in with mountain lions at some point. So what happens in those cases? A bear attacks a human or even is acting overly aggressive. That's not good for the bear usually, right?
Usually the bear winds up as the loser. Usually that's what happens. But yeah, every incident's different. Most of the time, though, when humans and bears come together, the vast majority of time, nothing happens. The bear goes on its way, and the human goes on its way. But some things to keep in mind is when bear attacks do happen, most bear charges are bluff charges. The bear doesn't follow through. But when they do attack, there's basically 2 types of attacks. There's predatory attacks. And there's surprise encounters, which are defensive attacks on the bear's part. The vast majority of attacks are defensive in nature. So,
sure. Mm-hmm. And I can think of one interaction where nothing happens, and that's during bear hunting. And then the bears are, again, not the winners. But sure, that's a whole other topic. Sure. Hey, we received from you a whole really big report on everything you do each year. And it's driving, and it's monitoring collared bears, and it's talking with people. You are doing so much, Brian. Tell us about some of the things that aren't simply bear presentations that you do.
Well, the majority of my job, Julie, is as an Idaho conservation officer, my job is to enforce the laws, the hunting and fishing laws for the state of Idaho, which means checking fishermen in the field, checking hunters in the field, checking their game, and responding when people have issues, trespass issues, someone's hunting on their property without permission, or there's a poaching incident, those type of things. And then, of course, that involves all the legal process after you have a court case, all the adjudication process involved with that.
Preparation, so, reports, all that
sure,
sort of thing.
Sure, lots of paperwork, you bet.
I think this is true of other folks from Idaho Fish and Game we've spoken to. They have an area specialty, but they, for the most part, are also generalists. They do all the full range of conservation officer work.
Oh, we have to, Phil. Yeah, if someone calls with an elk in their haystack, you know, mm-hmm. someone has to respond. So, I get those type of calls. Mm-hmm. Anything wildlife related would be your local conservation mm-hmm. officer, any sort of emergency situation. So,
and you work with local law enforcement, so you've got that responsibility times.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We work closely with both city police and sheriff's office. So,
okay. And tell me about this Bear Subcommittee of the Kootenai Valley Resource Initiative.
Oh, the Kootenai Valley Resource Initiative is designed, I guess I'm not a spokesperson for that group, but yes, we work with those people. It's an organization trying to help people and the community live with bears, basically, I guess you could say. So.
Sure. And you monitor marked bears with portable radio telemetry?
We do. Specifically, I pay more attention to bears that have gotten into mischief than research bears. Currently, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is trapping and radio collaring grizzly bears in North Idaho for research purposes. And they are in charge of that project. The bears I'm specifically interested in are management bears that we have trapped in management situations. They've gotten into some sort of mischief around people's homes or whatnot, and we've collared them for that purpose. And they tend to, and once they start getting into mischief, they tend to sometimes continue to get into mischief, so we want to know what they're up to and where they're at. So those are the bears we follow more closely.
Do you make an attempt at a certain point to relocate them?
We do, Phil, and we've tried different techniques for aversive conditioning as well. Relocation we use quite commonly. We captured a bear down near Silverwood last summer, relocated into the Cabinet Mountains of Idaho. I trapped a grizzly down near Clark Fork last summer that had gotten into a black bear bait. We moved him back into Montana. So that is a technique we'll use in certain situations. Aversive conditioning is a technique where you try to scare the bear and make the bear afraid of human beings. And people have tried different techniques, such as spanking them with beanbag shells out of shotguns, different noisemakers of different kinds. Karelian bear dogs have been used to chase the bears. Different techniques to try to scare the bears. And that seems to work with some bears, and with other bears, it doesn't seem to work much at all. Yeah. The case is still out.
You so. Just don't know. They're yeah. like people.
Exactly. I was going to say exactly. the same thing.
You first said spanking a bear. I'm imagining the conservation officer that got assigned to that task.
Ah. Oh, you bad bear, you. Yeah.
Well,
anyway.
From a safe distance, we spank the bear. Yeah. So
it's funny. A professional. Don't try this at home.
Exactly.
Oh, I should say so. Brian, I know this is a topic for an entire other hour, but there are different ways to behave if you're confronted by a black bear versus a grizzly bear. But generally, there are two approaches. Do you have time to tell us briefly about those approaches?
Sure. And probably more than getting into the black bear, grizzly bear thing would be more to, and this is sort of a complicated subject, Julie, but if you can, in the situation when you're in the woods, if you do surprise a bear at close encounters, what you want to do is watch the bear, and if you can, try to determine why the bear, if the bear continues to approach you, try to determine why it's doing that. Is the situation, do you believe it's a defensive encounter or a predacious encounter? The vast majority of them, where they're approaching, would be defensive. They feel threatened and they're approaching because they're defensive. Or they may simply be curious, okay? So your response in that situation would be different. If it is in one of the extremely rare situations where you think it's a predacious attack, then you're in a fight for your life and your behavior would be very different. But If the situation is one where you believe it's a defensive encounter, you'd want to, if you have a deterrent, absolutely spray the bear with your bear spray if you have bear spray. But if you don't have bear spray and the bear is going to take you down, that's when we recommend you play dead. Everybody's seen this on television. I don't like to call it playing dead because bears know people don't just walk around the woods and then fall down dead when they see them. I prefer to say you're being submissive to the mm-hmm. bear. The bear knows you're alive, but you lay flat on the ground, spread your feet apart, protect your head and your neck with your arms, and lie very still until the bear leaves. But that has saved many people's lives using that technique. But in a predaceous attack, if it is a rare situation where it's a predaceous attack, you don't want to do that. Then you've got to fight for your life. So
yeah, meaning it's about to eat, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a hard split-second decision to make. Mm-hmm. But
it can be, Phil. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So all of these incidents should be reported to Idaho Fish and Game.
Oh, please, yes. If you have any sort of close encounters with of those nature, we want to know about it. Absolutely.
Is the status of the grizzly bear and their uncertainty and frequency enough that if someone simply sees one, is that noteworthy?
At this point, Phil, probably not. I mean, I certainly like to know if you're seeing grizzlies, for sure. I would, especially grizzlies with cubs. And we're very interested if you're seeing grizzly bears with cubs. We do try to keep tabs in that. But I do like to know where the bears are, especially if it's someplace I'm not familiar with seeing them, someplace unusual where we're seeing them. So absolutely, I love hearing bear stories. So if you got a good bear story, give me a call.
So a good bear story, or if we see a grizzly, especially with cubs, that seems in a place that you wouldn't expect it, that's worthy of a call to Idaho Fish and Game.
Absolutely. Sure.
Is there a particular number that somebody should call?
Well, you can call my home office, 267-4085, and I may regret giving that number.
Right. And our listeners are responsible people.
We tend to think so. Are there any events coming up where you'll be talking more about bears and showing bear spray techniques, that sort of thing?
Yes, Julie. We have two workshops planned. I don't have the dates right in front of me, unfortunately. One's in Coeur d'Alene. The Idaho Conservation League is actually sponsoring these workshops. They're specifically designed for conflict avoidance and bear spray training. You can go practice with an inert can there. We provide inert cans, and you can actually spray the inert cans of spray. And then ICL has purchased a lot of cans at a bargain price. You can buy them very cheap if you want to buy a can of bear spray. There's one of those coming up in Coeur d'Alene. Forgive me, it's toward the end of May.
We'll find it out, and we'll do it during the community calendar. So
okay, yes. And another one at Priest Lake in June.
We'll report on those when we come back after the music break.
And I would think one could Google, one can Google Idaho Fish and Game and find that out.
We're about out of time. Any last-minute thoughts for the audience before we move to the next part of the show?
Get out there and enjoy the sunshine. It's
wonderful. It's beautiful, isn't it?
So.
And don't worry about bears. But just make a little noise.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Well, thank you for coming in this morning, Brian. As always, it's wonderful to hear from you. We'll have to have you back on maybe at the end of the season and see how this year's stats rank with last year's.
Thanks for having me, Phil and Julie. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
It was a really good update. Yeah. Thank you, Brian.
If you're just tuning in, this is KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio for North Idaho. As always, there'll be a podcast of this show available later on today. So if you missed any of it, if you missed all of it, you wouldn't be hearing me. But if you missed any of it and wanted to go back and listen to, you can go to KRFY.org and listen to the podcast. We're going to take a short break with the Mamas and Papas. 1968, I think it was, this song hit.